It is February the 7th, 2012. I am Steve Growick, the webmaster of www.gerweck.net, Growick.net, your source for all your pro wrestling and MMA news. And at this time, it's a very special time for me because I get a chance to welcome a true legend in professional wrestling, a former AWA heavyweight champion, a four-time All-Japan Triple Crown heavyweight champion, and the newest member of the Growick.net Hall of Fame. Today I give you Stan the Man, Stan the Lariat Hansen. How you doing, Mr. Hansen?
All right. I'm doing really good. Thanks, Steve.
Well, we do appreciate your time today. I know you don't do a lot of interviews, so we do appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to talk to us today. I guess, you know, I know you've been retired from wrestling for, about a decade now.
Yeah.
What are you doing away from wrestling these days?
Well, you know, there's an old saying in wrestling, you get big, you know, to make money, and then you spend the rest of your life to stay alive, you know, you try to lose weight. So I'm just trying to stay healthy, and I am healthy as far as I know. And, you know, I work out, but nothing with the lightweight, you know, just light stuff and just cardiovascular things. And I watch my kids play sports, and, you know, I mean, they're almost all grown now. But anyway, I'm pretty much retired.
How are you doing physically after all the years of the bumps in the ring? How's all the body parts doing?
Well, I had both my knees replaced, and actually I've had both my shoulders replaced too. So, you know, like I said, I just said that I'm pretty healthy, but of course I've had those four major operations, you know, but they basically alleviated all the pain, so I'm pretty much pain-free, and, you know, I'm healthy. And so a lot of wear and tear in wrestling over the years, especially in Japan. I mean, in the United States also, but Japan was a really physical, very much more physical part, and I spent 25 years there. So it took its toll.
I want you to talk a little bit about the book, The Last Outlaw by Stan Hansen. Of course, was co-written by Scott Teal. How did this book come together, and did it bring back a lot of memories going through your career to you know, put it all into an autobiography?
Well, you know, I'd kind of written this book, you know, earlier, and you know, back in early 2000, but I had heard about Scott Teal, and then got a hold of him, and we collaborated, I guess, together. And Scott had so much, you know, expertise and grammar and putting things in the right order. And he has a great history of wrestling that more than I did, actually. You know, I mean, even though I was in it, he is really a student of wrestling. So anyway, I think he kind of edited things down, and you know, but mainly it's pretty much my words, you know, and he surely added to it, you know, and but anyway, so it took us for whatever the reasons, it took us about 3 or 4 years of working on it, it seems, but finally we got it together and got it published. And I mean, the feedback is that a lot of people really enjoy it, and it's mainly about, you know, of course it's about my career, but about wrestling in Japan, where and a lot of things that happen there that usually a lot of people might not be aware of the daily life and so forth of wrestling, you know, in Japan. And so hopefully, you know, people will find it interesting.
And, of course, if they want to check that out, then go to
crowbarpress.com. You know, Crowbar Press, I mean, maybe there's some people that know, all the boys know, but, you know, the play on the word crowbar is a wrestling term for somebody who was really, really stiff, you know, really tight in the ring, and, you know, really hard to maneuver, and actually probably hard to work with. So crowbar in the wrestling terms is somebody that fit that kind of mold. So when Scott had Crowbar Press, there's probably a lot of people don't understand what crowbar means, actually, to the wrestler.
Well, talk a little bit about your growing up and how'd you get started in wrestling. Were you a big fan of professional wrestling growing up? Did you have some favorites? And How'd you get started with the Funks?
Well, you know, like I said, I was more into football and athletics and so forth. I didn't follow wrestling too much until I went to college at West Texas State. Well, it's West Texas A&M now, but West Texas State, and in Canyon, Texas, and that's the home of Terry Funk and Dory Funk and Dory Funk Sr. at the time. They all lived in the Amarillo Canyon area. And Terry and Dory both played at West Texas before I did. So through the just the common West Texas State, I got to know Terry Funk and started watching him wrestle a little bit as a football player there. And eventually that led to me getting into business through them, through the Funks.
How did you adopt the lariat as your finishing maneuver?
Well, the lariat is really a clothesline that you used to be able to do in pro football. I mean, in any kind of football, you know. And you used to do that. I played middle linebacker, and you used to clothesline the tight end as he came across, just hopefully to keep him looking for the football. So, but eventually, because of neck injuries and all, you know, it was just a bad deal. You know, they quit. They outlawed the clothesline, and so that was how I started doing the clothesline. And then, when I got into wrestling, I ended up using that. Nobody really used it, and I was kind of the first one to use it as a finish, and I did it, and put a Western name to it, and that's how it started.
You've had so many different title reigns, tag team championships, single championships, All Japan, Georgia Championship Wrestling, NWA, AWA, but is there one title or a particular reign that sticks out as kind of your favorite run as a champion?
I decided for a number of reasons that I go into in the book, that I wanted to, I put Japan as, that I just like Japan for a lot of reasons, like I said, that I get into, but I like Japan and like the way it was set up and so forth and the physical part of it. So once I got involved in the business, the two championships for both All Japan and New Japan that I worked for, the companies, those were probably my favorite belts. But I guess the Triple Crown, the one that was with All Japan in the end, they combined three separate belts there to form one belt, and I think that was probably my favorite belt.
You worked with, All Japan and New Japan at the heyday when they were very popular and they're very strong companies. Of course, it's obviously a lot different today. How did the companies compare, and how did you like working for the different companies?
Well, each one was, a different kind of business. And, I had kind of New Japan was kind of a more traditional Japanese-run type of business, very strict, very orderly, just very Japanese, where All Japan, had a little, it was a little more Western, opened up to more of the, it wasn't as strict Japanese hierarchy and so forth. There's always hierarchy in Japan, and that's one of the strengths about Japan society is that there is a hierarchy, and I know that goes against a lot of Americans, but, everybody can't be the boss, and as long as Japan, New Japan, All Japan, they had really strong bosses, and the hierarchy stayed below them, and they controlled their business and ran their business very, shrewdly and very astutely, And they were very successful. And then as they got, as the younger generation and times change, everybody, like I said, everybody wanted to kind of be a boss. And after I retired and so forth, they basically kind of lost that. And of course, Giant Baba died, and Inoki kind of moved on to a different company and so forth. And that lack of hierarchy has caused, I think, the demise of the wrestling in Japan. You know, that's my honest opinion. And because there always needs to be structure, and you know, I believe there needs to be an opening match, and there ought to be a main event. There shouldn't be 10 main events, you know. And I think the people in return want to build to one big match, you know. So,
how long did it take you to learn Japanese, and what was your favorite dish in Japan?
Well, I never really got fluent in the language. I should have, you know. The bad thing about it was most time there was Japanese that spoke English or broken English around us, and you know, so we weren't required. It's a shame that I didn't learn the language. I'd probably still be there. But anyway, it's a difficult language, but I learned enough to get around the restaurant, you know, and order food and get around town, and you know, I could. Yeah, but I wish I'd learned it better. It's a difficult language, but it can't, you know. I think the Destroyer probably learned it as well as anybody, you know.
What was your favorite dish in Japan?
Oh, there's a lot of great dishes, you know. I love Japanese food. I guess that's why I was able to stay there for so long. You know, I adapted after, you know, 2 or 3 years of going to Japan. I went out and learned to experience the food and, you know, just the nightlife. Nightlife not meaning bars so much, but just where people go to eat and after work. And that was, it was just a great place. And, I mean, I love, you name it. You know, long before sushi came to America, you know, I ate sushi and different kind of cooked fish, and they're just a wide variety of food, you know, really good.
Have you been back to Japan since your retirement in 2001?
Oh, yeah, I've been back a bunch of times. In fact, I just came back. I was over there in December, you know, on a vacation, you know, with my wife. And so, you know, I still go to Japan. I love Japan, you know.
What do you miss about wrestling full-time?
Oh, you know, I really don't know if I miss wrestling, you know, the physical part, you know, the getting in the ring and doing all that stuff. You know, I think I have a good memory of myself, or a good mental picture of myself as I was. You know, I can't imagine if I would have kept on going how I would be now. So, I miss Japan, like I've already said that, but I miss going to Japan and just the life in Japan. But in reality now, after being out of it 10 years, I miss all the, you know, the great wrestlers and the characters, you know, that I got to know here in the United States. And yeah, you know, I wasn't too friends with any of the Japanese per se, but you know, in America, I missed my generation guys, and it's always great to see some of the older wrestlers that I was involved with here in the States, and you know, they all had careers, and so we all have some kind of a common kind of thread, you know, that a lot of people don't have. And there's fewer and fewer of us that are left that have that common thread.
You know, we at GirlWick.net, we did a tournament last year where we did kind of a fantasy tournament, and it was the greatest tag team, 64 of the greatest tag teams of all time. And, of course, I had to put you in this tournament, and then I'm thinking, now who do I put you in with, because you had so many great tag team partners, Terry Gordy, Tenru, Spivey, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, Bruiser Brody, Tommy Rich. Looking back, is there one tag team partner that sticks out as your favorite?
It's kind of, I don't know, a little surprising, I guess, because mainly I guess Brody and I were in Japan. But without a doubt, my best partner was Bruiser Brody. And we dominated, man. I mean, we were, you know, I mean, it's a business. But let me tell you, we dominated we dominated the ring there in the 80s, you know. Nobody could touch us. We were both big and we could move, and we were real physical, and both in Japan and to the point where, you know, nobody had booked us together after we left, you know, when we were both green starting in Louisiana, you know, we basically weren't together. We did do a little stint, I guess, in the WWF for under Vince Sr., a little bit in 76, but we couldn't be used together in the States. But, Brody is by far my best partner. And I did have some great partners, and all the guys you named off, Spivey and Gordy. Gordy was a great talent, just a great talent. Tenyu was probably the best Japanese, I thought, one of the best for sure. Terry Gordy, Danny Spivey, had some great, great partners, Ron Bass was a nice partner. I mean, I was blessed to really have a lot of good partners. Even Baba, when we teamed up, was for about a year or so. That was a good team.
Yeah, Gary Albright, Austin Idol. I mean, you had kind of the gamut of great tag team partners looking back.
Yeah. A lot of those, Gary and I were teamed up. I wouldn't say, Idol was a good talent, and he was really good here in the States, he just came for a couple of tours, I think, so a lot of times I had tag matches with a lot of guys that were just kind of put in there on the card, but real partners, like I said, there was about, four or five there in Japan that were actually my partner,
Talk a little bit about Bruiser Brody, because I think today wrestling fans don't know a lot about him. Today's wrestling fans obviously didn't get a chance to grow up watching him because he died so early. Maybe a favorite memory, working with Bruiser, and how did you find out about his passing?
I got tons of memories of Brody and what we've done and what we went through from back in college all the way through, through Japan and down in Puerto Rico and everything. And, I go into it in pretty good depth. And in the book, of course, because you have more time to, tell all these stuff. And it's, we were both hungry. We were both lower, middle class raised. And, we were hungry. And I think that's what drove us and kind of connected each other at the hip. And so he was, he was a few years older than me, but like 3 years older. We were in the same college classes together and so forth. So, but he was a great talent in himself, and it is a shame. But I was in Japan, and Terry Gordy called me on the phone. I guess somebody had called him in the middle of the night and told him Brody had been murdered, and that's how I found out about it.
You appeared in No Holds Barred with Hulk Hogan, and, of course, you had a chance to work with Hulk in the early AWA days. What was your thoughts on him at that time? Did you ever foresee him being as big of a star as he turned out to be in professional wrestling?
I met Hogan before he became Hogan, a couple of times, I guess. But mainly I got to know Hogan in Japan for New Japan. And he was coming to New Japan, and we were actually teamed up, over there a bit for about a year or so. And he was... he's a big, impressive guy, I always thought that, just physically, he had height, and that's the most dominant physical characteristic there is when you're 6'6", or 6'7", that's just big. You just look big because you are big, there's not that many people that tall, and of course, he had a great physique and everything, so... We were kind of contrasting styles, but you know, he obviously with his personality, and then he went to the AWA and took it, you know, took it. I mean, just really, really did well there. And then, you know, whatever happened, and he ended up with the WWE. And you know, man, the rest is history. So, and I got the, I did a bit part in his movie and everything, which was, you know, fine, you know, but I didn't. He's crossed over into completely different. I mean, he's not a wrestler now. I mean, he's a movie star, isn't he, or whatever.
Yeah,
I mean, good for him.
Yeah, he does kind of everything now. TV, movies. He's in a commercial right now, Rent-A-Center commercial with Troy Aikman, another famous Texan, played for the Dallas Cowboys all those years. So,
yeah.
I was going to ask you about No Holds Barred. How did that come about?
Ooh. I'm not sure how that came about, but obviously, you know, I mean, that was Vince's promotion, or I think he, whatever it was, and somehow they got a hold of, somebody got a hold of me, wanted to know if I wanted to do a bit part. They saw this character in the movie, and they thought, somebody thought of me, and so, you know, I got a chance to go in there and work it, and you know, it was a lot of fun. You know, it was, I mean. It's a lot, you know, it's kind of hard work. Joe LeDuc, who is a really good wrestler in his own right, you know, we, and the camera people and everybody were just kept saying, you know, it's all camera angle. You don't have to hit anybody, you know, but I didn't know how to do it except to hit somebody. So, you mean, it was, you know, in acting, you know, you throw a punch in the camera angle, you miss the guy. You know, you don't hit the guy. You just swing in front of him, but the angle looks like you hit him. Well, of course, I didn't know how to do that. And so I was hitting Joe LeDuc, and I mean, we were both beat up after filming that part. And the director just kept saying, God, you guys are, you know. But anyway, God, I just remembered that part of it. Joe LeDuc and I kind of beat each other pretty good, not knowing how to be an actor.
I remember you doing that movie, and you know, that was like the late 80s. And of course, after you left AWA to go back to Japan, there was a, you know, a long gap before we kind of seen you back in WCW in the early 90s. Was there ever any like serious consideration or negotiations with you and Vince Jr. to ever work for WWF?
You know, I ended up working with Hogan over in Japan one time. They came and Vince and Hogan, they had a big dome show over, and there's, you know, again, I go through, I mean, chronologically, I went through a lot of stuff in the book and a lot of behind the scenes type stuff and everything. But, you know, basically the answer to that question is, you know, Vince, he knew that I was involved in Japan, and Japan was my main place. And, you know, I mean, you know, he made overtures that if I ever wanted to, you know, give up Japan, you know, that there'd be a, you know, come to the WWE, and maybe, you know, I could, you know, do something there. But, you know, I just ended up staying in Japan, and I ended up retiring, and, you know, so it never had that opportunity. But it would have been fun, you know, to go. And, I mean, you know, Vince has done for whatever he's done a heck of a job of, you know, promoting his company and everything. And so it would have been interesting, but it's something that never came about.
You know, looking back at your career, of course, you won so many great matches and had so many great title reigns. And, you know, from an American's perspective, do you ever, like, think of, wow, you know, I could have maybe, you know, headlined a WrestleMania. Maybe me and Hogan could have worked on a WrestleMania. Does that ever cross your mind?
I never felt. I always felt. I mean, you know, this doesn't sound braggadocious or anything, but, you know, I mean, I felt like I was a top talent. But I just chose, you know, I chose to stay in Japan. And, you know, so I missed out on a lot of big, you know, I missed out on a lot of the big, big money, but I enjoyed where I was. I like I said, I love Japan. I love the culture. You know, my wife is Japanese. You know, I mean, I just got a lot, you know, a lot of things connected to Japan, and I chose. I chose to stay in Japan because that's where I wanted to. But, you know, sure, I sometimes think, you know, I could have gone there and done that or something, but it just didn't work out. And the guys that did, you know, good for them. And, you know, there were some opportunities, but it just never worked out because I stayed in Japan to the very end.
Let me ask you, while we were talking about WWF or WWE and Vince McMahon Jr., and of course, he does his own Hall of Fame, and I know you're not one that gets caught up in that kind of recognition, but at the same time, have you ever thought about going into WWE's Hall of Fame, and has Vince made any overtures about, you know, hey, Stan, we would like to come in, have you come in and be inducted to the Hall of Fame?
No, there's been no overtures or, you know, a couple of years ago when they Inoki was introduced, I guess Inoki, I mean, he was inducted. Inoki asked for me to, you know, maybe be the guy that would introduce him for this. And so, you know, the WWE got a hold of me, and I came there and introduce Antonio Inoki to get inducted into their Hall of Fame. And I thought that was, you know, I mean, that was nice. And, boy, they treated me really nice, and it was really nice. But as far as, you know, getting inducted in the WWE, you know, I mean, that's something that, you know, I don't think about. You know, I've been inducted into another pro wrestling Hall of Fame, and you know, and I think that that's you know, in Albany, New York, and you know, the pro wrestling Hall of Fame. And I mean, that's voted on by the guys, and you know, I think that's a nice honor. Just that some of the other wrestlers thought that I might deserve to do that. So, but you know, I think the WWE Hall of Fame is you know, a great thing too. But it's not something that I'm sitting here waiting for a call, or I feel slighted because I haven't been called, you know. That's okay.
Of course, as we mentioned up front, you're the newest member of our Hall of Fame, the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame. Of course, that is voted on by the fans, the readers of our website, and you were voted in. And I think sometimes the legends sometimes don't do quite as well because today's wrestling fans don't know the legends quite as well, especially somebody that's not been in the public eye for, you know, in wrestling, if you're not in the public eye for 3 or 4 years, they forget about you.
Yeah, yeah.
And out of the limelight for a number of years, but fans remember you when you were voted into our Hall of Fame. So it's an honor to have you in our Hall
of
Fame.
Well, I tell you what, you know what, I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate that, and I think that you know, the fans that you know, follow your website and everything. I mean, anytime somebody votes something nice for me, I really appreciate it. And like I say, I've never been one to, you know, this is big and this is small or whatever, you know. I mean, you know, I like the little shows as well as I like these big old Superdome shows, you know. I enjoyed the wrestling in front of, a, you know, 700 people in Houma, Louisiana, you know, where you could reach out and smell and touch the people almost, you know. So I appreciate that, and I thank the fans for voting me in.
Absolutely. I don't know if you want to comment on this or not, but what was your best year financially in wrestling?
My first year, 1973, and it went downhill from there.
Well, maybe you get a little bit more into that in your book, because I'm sure you had with some of those paychecks from Baba back in the day, I'm sure you did fairly well for yourself.
You know, the thing about Japan was that you were on a long before they had big contracts here in the United States. Like I said, I missed out on all the big money. You know, I mean, guys made big money starting in the 90s, you know, with the WCW and Vince, and, you know, they started paying, you know, huge money, and that's good. And I mean, I did good. But I like Japan because way back before that, you know, I knew exactly what I was going to get. You were paid on a weekly guarantee, and so I could budget myself. And it wasn't huge money, but it was money that I learned to budget and live on and, you know, and save. And that was the key to me, and it was consistent. And then as time grew, I did make good money in Japan, but it was nothing like compared to what the guys made over here, you know. So, but anyway. But, you know, I chose to do that, and I have no regrets.
I want to ask you about the famous 1986 incident, AWA, with the championship belt. Because I remember, this is, of course, 86 is before the internet, before, you know, dirt sheets were real prominent. But I remember watching that on TV, and, of course, you were stripped of the title. You were going back to Japan with the championship. What really happened, and what happened with the physical AWA championship belt?
Well, they got the belt back eventually, you know, so, I mean, that's what happened to it, you know. But, you know, yeah, you know, it was just a business falling out between Vern and myself, and, you know, I never ever, my aspirations were never to, you know, get the belt. I mean, I didn't go to the WWF to really think that I would ever get the, you know, the belt. But I like chasing. I like trying to, you know, fight Bruno or Bob Backlund or, you know, who had it at the time. Or you know, Rick Martel had the, you know, the AWA belt at the time, and he was a top talent. And, you know, I liked going after him. So I was very surprised when I did get the belt. And you know, when you get it, you know, I wanted to make some money. I wanted to get promoted. I wanted to. So there was just some business conflict between, you know, how they looked, how they wanted to do the business and how I thought it should be done. And so that came to a kind of an impasse, and that's basically what happened, you know. And anyway, you know, they eventually got the belt back, and, you know, you can read about it in the book. I don't want to give all the little trinkets away, but anyway, yeah. You know, Vern gave me a guarantee one time, a verbal guarantee on a big show, and he held it. So I have nothing negative to say about him as not keeping a promise or anything like that, you know. But it was just a difference in philosophy and promoting, and you know, that happens. And as times changed, you know, the way the wrestling used to be, the promoter just had absolute total control over things. Well, like I said, wrestling evolved, and I think that as it evolved, the talent became a little more astute to business and astute to trying to take care of their own career. And, you know, and it's all got to be, you got to work together with the promoter who's promoting it. I mean, you just can't have your own self in mind, but you got to work together, but you also have to take care of yourself. And I think that that's what eventually changed in talent, as talent became more astute to trying to get, you know, get their share of what's going on. And, you know, the WCW and all those guys, I mean, Sting and Luger and all those guys, they got those big contracts and everything. And because they were, you know, they were in a position to demand that. And I think that changed the business. And, you know, but again, I wasn't involved in all that. I missed out on all that, but obviously that's what happened. So, I mean, that was kind of the falling out between Vern and I had, you know, over the, you know, the AWA belt.
I was asking Stan offline if he watches the AWA Classics on ESPN Classics, and of course that's a chance for, you know, today's wrestling fans to get a chance to look back at some of the classic matches we'd watch in the 80s on AWA. And I wonder if you could kind of reflect a little bit on the AWA working there, you know, Minneapolis. You had a lot of great talent there, you know, working with Colonel DeBeers and Larry Zbysko and Kurt Hennig and Nick Bockwinkel.
Jerry Blackwell. I mean, wow,
Jerry Black.
What a great,
yes,
great talent he was. And,
right.
Slaughter. And Jim Brunzell and Greg, you know, they were a good tag team. And, I mean, I had a chance to wrestle with Dick the Bruiser, man. You know, I mean, wow. I mean, just a legend type guy. The Crusher, Mad Dog Vachon. You know, I mean, they were, you know, they were probably at the end of their career. And but I mean, just I mean, I know they were like they're legend guys, right? And some great talent. And the AWA was probably one of it was, you know, there was like three basic territories back then, the WWF or WWF and NWA and the AWA. And AWA was like one of the great money territories in Minneapolis and Chicago and, you know, Winnipeg. And, I mean, man, they had some – and you only work like 15, 16 days a week, I mean, a month. And, God, it was a great territory. So – very high respected, and so yeah, there was some great talent there. Baron Von Raschke, what a great character and a great guy he was, you know, and Vern too, you know, Vern was a good worker and was involved, but you know, I didn't wrestle him. I think I might have wrestled him one time. I'm trying to remember way back there. Different time I went into the AWA, but it's premier territory, and at the time I guess you were talking about the ESPN and how it you know it was filming or showing the tapes, right?
Yeah, I remember, you know, in the 80s watching ESPN and watching AWA, and of course always hosted by Larry Nelson and Ron Trongard and Lord James Blears, and I remember those voices. So when they brought back the show, it was like, I haven't watched these tapes in, you know, how long, and suddenly they're on television again, and I'm seeing Sherry Martel, and I'm seeing Playboy Buddy Rose, and Pretty Boy Doug Summers, and Colonel DeBeers.
Yeah, all those guys.
Like,
they're,
wow.
There's some great talent.
Yeah. And then, of course.
DeBeers, you know, Easy Ed Wiskoski.
Yeah.
Anyway, but he was, you know, I mean, all those guys were really good talent. You know, Buck Zumoff and, you know, I mean, some of those guys, you know, were just, you know, Jim Nelson, he went in some Russian, Boris Zhukov.
Right, yeah.
You know, I mean, there was some great talent. But, you know, Jerry Blackwell was a great talent. A lot of people don't ever mention, but for a big guy, you know, he was a top talent. You know, I write a lot about Jerry Blackwell, actually, in the book. You know, there's some great – we crossed paths a number of times, you know, and he was a good talent.
I wondered, just in general, looking back at your career, you were talking about you didn't get a chance to go to WWF, but, you know, again, that was your decision. Is there any regrets?
Well, I worked at WWF, you know, twice. But I hadn't worked since Vince Jr. took over. It became WWE. I haven't worked for them, but I worked for, you know, New York. I always called it New York.
Sure.
You know, a couple of times. But
just in general, looking back at your career, do you have any regrets?
No, I really don't. I don't think I do. I mean, I can honestly say I don't. You know. You know what? I headlined a number of big cards. Was it the biggest card ever? Well, up until recently, Brody and I, we were on the biggest card ever in Puerto Rico. We were in probably the biggest card ever in the Tokyo, you know, Dome. And I've been in the Superdome when so I've been in some big shows. But, you know, to tell the truth, I like the weekly or at least monthly type of territory where you have to go back, you have to get the crowd back from the show, and, you know, and you're not constantly promoting the next greatest show ever. It's the next greatest show. Never mind the one that just finished. That was supposed to be it, but now we got a new one we got to promote. So, you know, it's just a different way of looking at things and promoting, and I guess I'm old school, and that's the way I am.
How did WCW come about in the early 90s?
Well, I'm not really sure. You know, I think of course, that all started, it was originally, you know, Georgia Championship Wrestling, and they, Ted Turner's TBS, it was the first, it got on cable. Cable started going, and they had Georgia Championship Wrestling, and it was the highest rated show on their brand new TBS cable TV, you know, and so, you know, Jim Barnett, I guess, owned Georgia Championship Wrestling, and Ole Anderson was the booker when I got involved with them, and you know, they did that, and then. You know, I'm not sure exactly what they did. Did they combine Charlotte and, you know, I was in Japan, so I all that stuff was happening. I was basically over in Japan, so, but WCW, they renamed it or something, and but it was basically the old Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Do you watch wrestling today at all?
No, I really don't. I mean, every once in a while I flip through and, you know, I mean, it's on all the time somewhere. And, but basically I don't know anybody that's really wrestling anymore. They're all pretty much retired or agents or something, you know. There's a couple of the sons of guys I knew that are wrestling. And, anyway, it's, you know, everything's evolved. I just, you know, I just don't follow the wrestling now. But a lot of people do, you know, and there's a lot of whole new generations of fans out there. So
talk about your sons. Obviously, you got a couple talented sons playing baseball.
Yeah, I do. You know, I got a bunch of good kids, you know, really, you know, they're all talented in something, you know, and much more talented than I ever was. But then my two youngest sons are both baseball. One's in college at UT Arlington. He's a pitcher, but he's getting redshirted this year. And I have another son that's in the minor leagues with the Seattle Mariners organization, and he played at Baylor University, and that's why I'm kind of down here in Texas kind of watching him when he was here. But now he's in the minor leagues and, you know, trying to make it there. It's a tough road, you know. Baseball, there's just tons of talent out there. Every team is full of it, you know. And but anyway, it'll all, I mean, it's his life and his career, and, you know, so I'm really proud of both guys, both my sons. I mean, I'm proud of all my kids, but, you know, it's a struggle. Athletics is a struggle, and there's, you know, for every win, there's a loss. So, you know, it's tough, and it's character building. So, you know, I think it's good. And in a lot of ways, that's the way it was in wrestling. You know, when I started out, you know, I mean, I didn't have anybody to take me and push. I had to work my way up and get the opportunity, and, you know, given the opportunity, I was able to, you know, advance, and, you know, some did, some don't, you know. And so there's a small parallel between what they're going through and what I went through, you know, way back there. But
Which organization does your son play for?
Well, he plays for the Seattle Mariners.
Okay.
And he's in he was with their High Desert team last year. High.
Is that like a single A ball or?
Yeah, that's
okay.
Yeah, single A.
Okay.
High.
Okay.
It's called High. He was in High last year.
Okay, good. One more question about wrestling. You know, after you retired in 2001, was there any interest in continuing into working in wrestling, either as a booker, as an agent? Is that something that would have interested you at that time?
Well, you know, I was still involved a little bit with the Japanese, you know, after I retired as a kind of a figurehead, you know. You know, I had the perfect job, you know. I couldn't help or hurt anybody, and I just kind of went out. I was just, you know, using my the history of who I was in Japan as being involved, you know, with the organ, you know, the company, and that was a great job. So that was kind of, you know, that was good for a while as it lasted, you know. But things changed in Japan, and you know, Baba had passed away, and Miss Baba, you know, got out of the wrestling business. So then basically, that was my connection. And, so anyway, things evolve on and move on, you know. So, but, so I'm not, you know, as far as I'm 62 years old. I don't want to go on the road, you know. I mean, I'd love to have some income, you know, of course. And that's always kind of a little draw there. To, you know, a lot of guys my age are I guess, agents and are involved in part of the promotion part of the business, you know. But at this stage, I don't know how much time I got left. You know, I don't want to be on the road at this age, you know. Nobody's offered me a job anyway. But I never looked to be in the promoting end of it or the booking end or anything like that.
Do you make many appearances? Is there a chance for fans to see you and to meet you nowadays?
You know, a couple of these guys that promote these fan fests or whatever they're called, you know, they'll get a hold of me every couple of years or something. I'm not one of your probably big guys that are people demanding to see, you know, but. You know, I am what I am, you know, and, you know, my career speaks for itself, and, you know, I don't try to go around, you know, being somebody I'm not. And, but if, you know, there is some interest and people seem to remember me and, everybody got some kind of match or something that, you know, that they might remember me in over some 30 years in the wrestling business. So, you know, I think that people, if they're interested in that and a lot of the historically about a lot of the great talent from the, you know, 70s, you know, from the Funks to, you know, I mean, to Brody to, you know, I mean, just Bruno Sammartino and, you know, I mean, there's just some great talent and that I was involved with and people interested in that. I go into detail about a lot of those people and Last Outlaw.
Well, I would love to meet you sometime and shake your hand. And so if I ever run into you, I'd love to, you know, shake your hand and thank you for all the great entertainment you've provided me over the years. And who knows, maybe get a chance to get an autographed copy of your book.
Yeah, well, thanks. You know, I appreciate you giving me a call, and thanks for whoever, you know, you voted me into your Hall of Fame, you know, and, you know, I appreciate the fans. That, you know, they got to have a long memory to remember me because I've been gone and I was out of the States basically, you know, for so long anyway. So, anyway, you know, it's a real honor that somebody thought of me to do that, and I appreciate you give me this honor.
Well, it's an honor to talk to you and finally get a chance to learn a little bit more about you. As I said, I've been following your career for a long time. I remember the AWA days. I watch a lot of Japanese tapes. You know, those old tape traders back in the day would, you know, try to find particular shows to see their favorite talent. So it's an honor and pleasure, and it's a pleasure to have you in to the Gerwick.net Hall of Fame. And the book is The Last Outlaw, by Stan Hansen with Scott Teal. We definitely recommend you check that out at crowbarpress.com. And we really appreciate your time today, and we wish you all the best.
Okay. Well, thanks a lot. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Stan.
All right.